Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, Chapter entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Text Number 11. Worship. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Since you are my very obedient son, I ask you to beget children qualified like yourself in the womb of your wife. Rule the world in pursuance of the principles of devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus worship the Lord by the performance of Jagya. Translation responsibly. Since you are my very obedient son,
since you are my very obedient son,
I ask you to beget children.
I ask you to beget children
qualified like yourself.
Qualified like yourself.
In the womb of your wife.
In the womb of your wife.
Rule the world in pursuance.
Rule the world in pursuance.
Of the principles of devotional service.
In the principles of devotional service.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And thus worship the Lord.
And thus worship the Lord.
By the performance of Jagya.
By the performance of Jagya.
Purport. The purpose of the material creation by Brahma is clearly described herein. Every human being should beget nice children in the womb of his wife as a sacrifice for the purpose of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service. In the Vishnu Purana 389, it is stated, Vanashrama Charavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Arajate Panta Nanya Tat Tosha Karanam. One can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, by proper discharge of the principles of Varna and Ashrama. There is no alternative to pacifying the Lord by execution of the principles of the Varna Ashrama system. Vishnu worship is the ultimate aim of human life. Those who take the license of married life for sense enjoyment must also take the responsibility to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. And the first stepping stone in the Varnashrama, and the first stepping stone is the Varnashrama Dharma system. Varnashrama Dharma is the systematic institution for advancing in worship of Vishnu. However, if one directly engages in the process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it may not be necessary to undergo the disciplinary system of Varnashrama Dharma. The other sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, directly engaged in devotional service, and thus they had no need to execute the principles of Varnashrama Dharma. Namagyan timadandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam pancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha petitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Lord Varaha Dev is appearing in this section of the Bhagavatam, and his appearance is to lift the earth back to its original position. So it is described that of all the planets within this universe, And there are practically unlimited planets. If you look into the sky at night time, at a clear place, like when you're at the farm, you can see thousands of planets, and there are more than that. There are so many planets within this universe. There's many, many, many planets. So those thousands and thousands of planets, only two of those planets you can go back to Goloka, Vrindavan, or Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world from. There is Earth, which is where we are, Bhumi, Loka. And then there is Brahma Loka, Satya Loka, or the planet of Lord Brahma. If Lord Brahma is a Vaishnava, sometimes Lord Brahma is a devotee and sometimes he's a Gyani. Sometimes he is the Lord himself and sometimes he's a Jiva. Sometimes the Lord will take the form of Brahma directly if there's no qualified Jiva. Usually he is a Jiva. Usually he is a living entity. Actually, it says that to become Lord Brahma, you have to perfectly practice Varnashram, the Varnashram system, for 100 lifetimes. And then after 100 lifetimes of perfect practice, you develop the Atikara, the qualification, to take birth as Lord Brahma and to head the universe. It is also said that when a jiva, when the jivas leave the spiritual world originally, when we fall from Goloka or from Vaikuntha, then our first birth is as Brahma or as a great Prajapati, one of the high level demigods within the universe. So Brahma is an extremely qualified position. And if you can make it to Brahma Loka, it is not easy to get to Satya Loka or Brahma Loka. It's actually much higher in terms of its geographical position within the universe. Its position within the universe. It's much higher than the others. We have the 14 planetary systems, and we have the Bhuloka, or the Bhumandala, where we are. We're in the middle. Earth is in the middle. There's the planets, about six or seven planetary systems above and below us. We're right in the middle of the universe. And then there is the Jana, Maha, Tapa, Lokas. The Swaga is above us, the planets of the demigods. And then you go above, there's the planets of the rishis and the sages. And then a long way above that is Brahmaloka, where Lord Brahma lives. And it's right at the height of the universe, the topmost northern position in the universe. So if you can get there, which is not easy, to get there takes lifetimes. You have to gradually go up through the different planetary systems, Janaloka, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, you're going up. And if you become extremely qualified, then you get to the position of Brahmaloka. And then, while you're there, if Brahma is a pure devotee, he's a Vaishnava, and he's fully focused on Krishna consciousness, then by his association, you become fully purified. And then, at the end of Brahma's life, because everyone on Brahma Loka or Satya Loka, they live as long as Lord Brahma. So, his lifetime is the duration of the universe, which is 100 of his years. If you are still there when he leaves this world, and he is in perfect Krishna consciousness, he transcends, everyone else transcends simultaneously, and they all go back to Krishna. So that's one methodology for going back to Godhead. Hands up if you want to go back to Godhead. Okay. Everyone talks it up. Everyone say, I want to go back to Godhead. Okay. If you want to go back to Godhead, you have to get serious. It's not easy to go back to Godhead. It requires complete surrender to Krishna. That's what it requires. It requires you to become completely surrendered to Krishna. Which we're not close to that at this point in time. We are riddled with material desires. We have so many material desires. And we have so many other 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 attachments as opposed to just Krishna. But to get to Krishna, you have to be completely attached to Krishna. That is the process. So, you can take many lifetimes. You can develop your consciousness, and after many lifetimes, you can bring yourself up to Brahma Loka, and then you may go to Goloka, Vrindavan, or Vaikuntha. Or you can stay here in Dang Street, and you can chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in front of Gaura-Nitai, and you can go back to Godhead in 30, 40 years. That's how powerful this process is. But the problem is that devotees don't understand how powerful this process is. We can actually, this is actually a portal where we are right now. This is actually a portal because Earth is the only other planet that you can go back to Goloka or Vaikuntha from. It's only this planet where we are now. And places like this, Prabhupada said they are embassies of the spiritual world. You know, Prabhupada was here in Melbourne, and Prabhupada said, this is not Melbourne, it is Vaikuntha. Right? And then he said, it is Vrindavan. Prabhupada said that here in Melbourne, right? In front of Radha Ballabha. He said, wherever Radha Ballabha are, when you're in front of them, you are in Vrindavan. When you're in front of Gaura-Nitai, you're in Mayapur. And when you're in front of Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, you're in Jagannath Puri or Dwarka. So you are in the spiritual world. And when Prabhupada installed Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said the whole spiritual world is in the four walls of the temple. Because Prabhupada built that beautiful temple in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he installed Krishna and Balaram personally in Krishna Balaram Mandir in 1975, I think it was, same year that he installed Gaura-Nitai here. I think he installed Krishna Balaram, then he came straight here, more or less, and then he installed Gaura-Nitai here. I think it was very close, the two installations. Was that? Yeah, was that before here? It was probably just before. Yeah, because here was May, and I think there would be probably April, because April, early May, that's usually Radha. So, Prabhupada said, because when Prabhupada created that temple, you know, devotees like to wander around Vrindavan. And actually, Prabhupada said one time, a devotee said to Prabhupada, oh, I'm going to Vrindavan, or I'm in Vrindavan. And then the devotee said to Prabhupada, what do we do when we're in Vrindavan? When you go to Vrindavan, what do you do? And Prabhupada said, just wander. Just wander. It's Braj. Braj literally means to wander. To move. Like that. Braja. To wander around. Just wander through Vrindavan. He said that one time. He said that. But another time, one of the devotees, there's a couple of times actually. One devotee, Prabhupada, you know at Prabhupada's house, if you've been to Vrindavan in Krishna Balaram, Prabhupada's house is there, and Prabhupada was there. And one devotee was going, walking, and he was like about to leave the temple complex. And Prabhupada said, where are you going? And the devotee said, Prabhupada, I'm going to Radha Kund. And Prabhupada said, there are enough monkeys there already. Already enough monkeys over there in Radha Kund. So you're not qualified to go to Radha Kund. If you go to Radha Kund, you have to go there under the guidance of your guru. Otherwise, you may commit offences. And then you may become a monkey. Be careful. If you go to the Holy Dharma, you have to be very careful. Especially Vrindavan. Mayapur is much more lenient, but in Vrindavan, you have to be very careful what your consciousness is like. If you go to Vrindavan, or Mayapur, if you go to the Holy Dharma, you have to go there under guidance. Don't just go there unless you have proper guidance. Otherwise, you will not understand how to respect and enter the Holy Dharma and respect the residence of the Holy Dharma properly. So then, another time, one devotee he went somewhere for a number of hours. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. At the Krishna Balaram Mandir in his house. And then the devotee came back. He'd been away for a number of hours, and Prabhupada said, "Where were you?" Prabhupada was a little upset. He said, "Where were you?" And devotee said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I went for a walk to chant japa and, you know, just wandered around somewhere around Vrindavan." And Prabhupada said, "Do not leave this temple." He said, "The whole spiritual world is in the four walls of this temple." He said, "I've spent so much time and money to build this temple and you go somewhere else. Do not leave this temple." Prabhupada said that. In other words, what Prabhupada was saying was that at that time, devotees were very young. They were very new in Krishna consciousness. And they just wander around Vrindavan. There's so many Babajis and so many gurus. And even Prabhupada's godbrothers, who were living in Vrindavan, they were misleading Prabhupada's disciples. There's history there where Prabhupada says, "Do not associate." He says, "Be careful." So you have to be very careful. In other words, Prabhupada is teaching us, don't sit there because people have to come in.
Sorry?
Don't sit there because people have to come in. So sit there or there or there or something. Sit somewhere else. So Srila Prabhupada, he told the devotees that you just be very careful when you're wandering around. In other words, that's the same instruction. When you go to Vrindavan, then don't just wander anywhere. You know, make sure you're under guidance. If you're more mature as a devotee, then you can discriminate, you can discern. And when you're very mature as a devotee, there's no harm. Because even if you meet someone who is practicing something different, you know how to you understand them in proper perspective and proper consciousness. So there's no harm. You can wander, you can meet so many people. You don't become effective because you understand everything properly. But when you're a young devotee, and Prabhupada's devotees, when they're very young, he was protecting them. But he was giving that basic formula, that basic understanding, that the whole spiritual world is in the four walls of this temple. So when we come into this temple, like we are now, we are in the spiritual world. We're in Goloka Vrindavan. It is non-different from Mayapur, from Puri, from Vrindavan itself, and Dwarka. It is non-different. But what is our consciousness like? Are we in that state of consciousness? You can be here. You can be sitting over there, but then you're thinking of one of the Brahmacharinis who's sitting over here. And one of the Brahmacharinis is sitting over him. She's thinking of one of the Brahmacharis. So you can be in the spiritual world, but your consciousness is not in the spiritual world. You can be thinking all sorts of crazy things right now. No? You can come in here and chant your japa, but, you know, whether your mind is with the holy name and with Krishna, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I remember Radha Charan Prabhu, my godbrother, many years ago, he gave class here. And I was a new devotee. And, we, you know, in the morning we used to all chant japa, you know, like around, you know, all chanting, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then he said, I remember him saying this, it was a good point. He said that, imagine if we put one of those, like sensors or something on your brain, like on your head, and then you connect it to a television, we put a big television up there above Prabhupada, and then everyone can see while you're chanting japa, and everyone can see what's actually going on in your head while you're chanting japa. Right? It would be like a comedy festival. Really? You're thinking of that? Yeah, so all sorts of things go through your head while you're chanting japa. So you can go back to Godhead from the earthly planet. That's the whole point. That's why Varaha Dev goes into the bottom of the universe. Varaha appears, Krishna appears as a boar, goes in the bottom of the universe, picks up the earth, and puts the earth back where it should be. Because the earth is the most important planet in this universe. There's no more important planet. And, as we've discussed previously, on earth there is a cycle which lasts for 4,300,000 years. Right? On Earth, there is Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. And this cycle goes perpetually. Right? So right now, we're in the Kali Yuga on Earth. And it is said that this is the most auspicious of all the Yugas. Right? It is more. Vyasadeva himself, I've told that. You remember that story I've told a few times? Vyasadeva goes to, sages go to visit Vyasadeva in Badrikashram, up in the Himalaya, where Vyasadeva lives. And the sages are arguing, which is the best ashram? Which is the best marana? Which is the best yuga? They're having these, sages like to argue. So they're trying to establish which yuga is the best. So one sage says Satya is best, one says Treta is best, one says Dwapara is best. And then Vyasadeva is taking a bath in the Ganga. And Vyasadeva is like a very jovial kind of person. So he puts his head under the water and he comes up. And they say, which yuga is the best? Satya, Treta, or Dwapara? And then he puts his head under the water and then he comes up and he says, Kali. Kali is the best. So Vyasadeva himself says Kali Yuga is the best out of all of the ages. And they say, which Varna is the best? Is it Brahmana? Is it Kshatriya? Is it Vaishya? Which one is the best? And they say, which ashram is the best? They're arguing. Is it sannyasi, is it vanaprastha, is it brahmachari? So he puts his hand under water, he comes up, he says, Grihastha is the best. So in Kali Yuga, Grihastha is the best ashram, in general. Doesn't mean everyone has to be. It's not like a blanket instruction, everyone should be a Grihastha. Yeah, brahmachari is good, actually. It's actually superior if you can do it. If you are genuine, is better. And sannyas is the best, if you can do it genuinely. Then that is the best. But generally, most people cannot. Kali Yuga means adhikara is not there. Qualification is not there. So therefore, be grihastha. That's like 90%, 95%, 99% probably in Kali Yuga. People should do that. So he says, and then he goes under, and he comes back up. They say, what is best, Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya? And he goes under, what he comes back up? He says, Mataji is best. Not even Brahmana, not even Kshatriya, not even Vaishya. Mataji is best. To be a woman in Kali Yuga is the best. It's the best birth. It says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the low-born people, even they can take to bhakti. He says, the street, the women, the sudras, and the Vaishya. He said, even they can go back to Godhead. Right? Even a woman can go back to Godhead. Normally it's considered like a lower birth. In the Vedic times, woman. Woman is considered lower birth. Vaishya is considered lower. Sudra is considered lower birth. Even they can go back to Godhead, Krishna says in Gita. But Vyasadeva specifically says the best is being a woman in Kali Yuga. Because women tend to be less complicated than men in some ways. In other ways, they're far more complicated than men. In some ways. Yeah. You cannot understand a woman's mind. It is achincha shakti. Achincha shakti means inconceivable. No one can understand it. Even they can't understand it. And if you try to work it out, you will become insane. Try to work it out. What's going on in a woman's head? No one can work it out. You know what Lord Brahma said? He was the first person to create women. He was the first person in this universe. You know what he said? He said, you can't live with them and you can't live without them. He was the first one. You can't live without them, most people. I mean, if you can, we take the dust from your feet. If you can live without them. If you cannot, because most people cannot, but then you can't live with them either because you can't understand what's going on in there. There was one movie, a very famous movie, came out a few years ago. And I always give this advice to grihasthas. Because grihasthas, we're counseling grihasthas a lot. So you have to always give them advice how to live with each other, how the man should live with the woman, how the woman should live with the man. So in this movie, the one very good line is there. One lady, she asked one man, he writes women's novels. Women's novels, like how women think. So he's a man, he writes that. And then the woman says, how do you understand us? Because he writes these novels so well, it's like he understands women. And she said, how do you understand us? He said, it's very easy. He said, I just think like a man, and then I take out rationality and accountability. And that's a woman. They're just like men, but they're not rational and they're not accountable. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want, and just because they're feeling like that, it's okay. And that's a woman. So if you live with one, you have to understand this, and then your life will be peaceful. Because if you try to fight material energy, you never win. So you just have to accept. Like that. So, Krishna says in the Gita, he says, if they're a woman, they can still go back to Godhead. Right? If they're a sudra or a vaishya, they can still go back to Godhead. But Vyasadeva says women are actually the best. So why does Vyasadeva say, in Kali Yuga, if you take birth as a woman, it's the best birth? Because women are more complicated in some ways, but in other ways they're also less complicated. Because they just inherently worship Krishna. Inherently. It's natural for them. And if you go to, say, Radha Govinda Temple in Jayapur, which is one of the most famous temples in India, if you really want to understand what is bhakti, then go to Mangalati at the Radha Govinda Temple in Jayapur, and you'll see how much devotion people have for the deity, how much love people have for the deity, devotees. So when you go there, everyone at the front, at Mangalati time, in front of the deity, it's all women. Men can't even get close to the deity. Because the women have so much devotion. It's just natural. They're just simple. Women's birth is based on emotion. And that's what bhakti is. Bhakti is emotion. It's devotion. So therefore, it's a superior birth in one sense. If a woman can just focus on Krishna, she can easily make advancement. And if a man can just focus on Krishna, just Krishna, then you can easily make advancement. So, Vyasadeva said, then to be a woman, to be in Kali Yuga, to be a Grihastha, he said, these are the best. So we have to understand our situation. Now, Varaha is collecting the earth from the bottom of the ocean in the universe, the Garbhodak ocean. He brings it up and he sets it in its position because the earth is the most significant planet within this universe. And right now, as we have understood, there are 1,000 Divya Yugas, or Yuga cycles, in a day of Lord Brahma. In Lord Brahma's one day, there are 1,000 cycles. So in 999 of those cycles, then the avatar for Kali Yuga is a Vaikuntha avatar, and the avatar for Dwapara Yuga is also a Vaikuntha avatar. But in one yuga, of those 999, then the original Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead from Vrindavan, Krishna himself, comes to this earth planet. And then straight after that, then the Parishishta Leela, means like the follow-up Leela, or the uncompleted Leela. The next Leela takes place, and that original form of God, he reappears again in Kali Yuga in a golden avatar to experience what he could not experience in the Dwapara Yuga in his original form of Krishna. And of those 999 or 1,000 Divya Yugas, this particular one is that one. So how do we understand our fortune? We're on earth, we've got the right body, we're in the right place, the time could not be more auspicious. And Prabhupada said the whole spiritual world is in the four walls of this temple right here. This temple is a porthole back to Goloka Vrindavan. You can enter back to the spiritual world right from this temple. But you have to be in the right consciousness. That's the point that we keep making. Most devotees fall asleep while they're chanting their japa. Sometimes devotees are falling asleep while the kirtan's going on. Not falling asleep. I mean, have you ever seen anyone fall asleep during the kirtan? No, we don't see that. Japa, you do. That's why there is Haridas Thakur. It says in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that Haridas Thakur would chant how many rounds every day? 3 lakhs. So how much is that? That's like 192 rounds. Right. So it said the first 64, or the first lakh, he would chant silently. Then the second 64, he would chant to himself. It means audibly, you could hear. And then the third 64, he would chant loudly. So there are three ways to chant japa. You can chant japa silently, within the mind. That is a bona fide form of japa. That is only recommended for advanced devotees. Because new devotees, they will find that very difficult to control their mind properly by chanting silently. And then, the second method is the way most of us chant, is, audibly, so others can hear. That is called kirtan, japa kirtan, sankirtan. And then the third method is very loudly, so you're purifying all the living entities. So it is described that of the three, the most powerful type of chanting is when you chant very loudly for the benefit of all the living entities. So it doesn't mean you should chant your japa like that, but it means that when we're doing sankirtan, that is the most powerful method of self-realization. When you're chanting loudly with other devotees, dancing and chanting. So that is the most powerful method to purify your consciousness. And you don't see devotees falling asleep. When they chant japa, you see them falling asleep. That's common. Devotees are chanting, but they're drifting off. You ever see that happen sometimes? What do you do when that happens? If you see another devotee falling asleep, then what do you do? Shake your beads. Hey, go and put in their face. Go, hey, wake up. Hare Krishna. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who is one of the gurus in the Hare Krishna movement, in the morning, he's in the Philadelphia temple. He was the temple president there for many, many, many years. Then in the morning, he would have a water pistol. So one of the brahmacharis falling asleep, he'd walk past and just go, shh. Squirt on the face. In other words, if you see a devotee falling asleep while they're chanting japa, you should wake them up. You should go to the devotee and you should wake them up and say, Prabhu, don't sleep. If I see devotees drifting, I go over there, and just rub them on the shoulder or something and just say, come on, wake up. Don't fall asleep now. Fall asleep when it's time to take rest. But don't fall asleep. You're japa. You're not supposed to fall asleep during japa. It's offensive chanting. It's inattentive chanting. You can't make any advancement when you're falling asleep. So stay awake. So the most powerful way to chant is sankirtan, because you won't fall asleep at least. But you see that devotees, their consciousness, even during the kirtans, I see these days many times, seems like it becomes a bit more prevalent now. I don't know why, but devotees, even when they're doing kirtan, they tend to be, we're all doing, like after Guru Puja, and then we start doing kirtan. But you see devotees, their minds aren't really there in the kirtan. Their minds are kind of, you can see they're floating up, or they're having their conversations. Everyone starts having their conversations, during the Guru Puja. Sometimes you turn around and you hear like there's this whole thing going on. But the fact is that you're in front of Prabhupada and you're supposed to be glorifying Prabhupada at that time. If you've got something that's so important you need to discuss it, then just go outside and talk about whatever it is and come back in. But don't have all your conversations and everything. And then during the kirtan, sometimes you see devotees having all their conversations. It means their mind is not really absorbed in the holy name, in kirtan ras. And if you read the songbook of the Vaishnava Acharyas, there's that book that came out from the BBT in the early 70s. We still have it. It's called the Songbook of the Vaishnava Acharyas. If you're reading the introduction, then what does Prabhupada say? He says, the safest place in the material world is Kirtan, but it's two words that he uses. Rasa, yeah, very good. He says, in Kirtan Ras, Prabhupada says that in the introduction. He says, the safest place in the material world is in Kirtan Ras. So you might be in the Kirtan, but are you in Kirtan Ras? What does Rasa mean? We'll ask the Rasas. What does Rasa mean? Huh? Taste. Rasa, what does Rasa mean?
Mellow.
You don't know. Okay, so we will enlighten you. Okay. So Rasa means, it means mellow, taste, flavor. The pleasure that you derive from something, rasa, the juice. Just like you have a rasgulla. So what does rasa mean? Juicy. Right? Imagine if you just have a gula. But there's no ras in it. Because they get the paneer. You know, they make a paneer ball. And then what do they do with the paneer ball? Right? They drop it in the sugar syrup. The rasa. Rasa means the juice. So imagine if you got the paneer ball and it hasn't been soaked for 24 hours in the juice. What does it taste like? It's dry. It's not as tasty. Not as pleasurable. Pleasure in eating comes from rasa. Like if you get a piece of broccoli, and the broccoli is juicy and fresh, then when you eat it, then there's rasa, there's pleasure there, there's invigoration, there's taste. But if you get a dry piece of broccoli, which has been sitting there for 2 weeks, right, and then you cut and you cook that and you eat that, there's no real pleasure in that. So where does the pleasure come from? It's the rasa, right, the juice. So Prabhupada says kirtan ras. You can be in the kirtan, but are you extracting the rasa from the kirtan? Are you absorbed in the kirtan? Are you connected to God in the kirtan? And interesting, because at the moment I'm studying very carefully our process of bhakti. And what is the process of bhakti which we are given by Lord Chaitanya through Rupa Goswami? Right? It is a process which has 9 steps. Right? It begins with Shraddha, goes to Prema. So you should all know that, right? Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti Nishta, Ruchiya, Sakti Bhava Prema. These are 9 levels. So one devotee, Uttama Shloka Prabhu, is a Prabhupada disciple. He's written an amazing book about the progression through these stages. So I'm studying that very carefully at the moment. So as we go through these stages, and you get to the higher levels of bhakti, because eventually we're meant to get to the higher levels. We're not supposed to be these mental, you know, brahmacharis and brahmacharinis for the rest of our life. You know, there's no job description for a mental brahmachari or brahmacharini in Goloka Vrindavan. Well, you're going to get back there and you're going to go, I don't want to go to Crossways today. It's like, I don't want to, if you're going to be like this, you're not going to get back to the spiritual world. Right? You just have to put your mind, your heart, your body, your soul into Krishna's service, and then you'll get back to Goloka Vrindavan. So, as you get into the higher levels of chanting, because our process is chanting. And what does chanting lead to? Right? When you become advanced in your chanting, your kirtan becomes smaranam, remembrance. And Prabhupada actually says this, you know, because we always quote Prabhupada saying, just hear. You know, many times when they're chanting, and they start saying, like one time one devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, when I chant, I see a white light, and it's coming towards me. And he said, what does this mean? What should I do? And Prabhupada said, keep chanting, it will go away. So this is, you know, there's no white light that comes to you. If this is what you're seeing, it means that's your mind. Right? That's not the actual effect of chanting. But Prabhupada says, he says, just hear. But that's not his only comment or instruction on chanting. There are instructions where Prabhupada clearly says, when you are chanting, the lila of kirtan, right, the ashtikaliya lila, or the lila smaranam, will automatically come into the mind. Prabhupada says that. He says, while you're chanting, the lilas of Krishna will come into the mind. And it's like watching a movie. Right? You're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and then suddenly these lilas, they just come, one after another, and you absorb. So when you're very advanced, which eventually we have to become, we can't stay neophyte forever, when you're chanting, you will remember Krishna. From Nama comes Rupa, comes Guna, comes Lila. Right? And it says when you get to the platform of Nishta, when you start going to that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, you will purchase Krishna's form, his Rupa. So whenever you chant, the form of Krishna will come into your heart and your mind and your consciousness. And that's what we're meant to be doing. And most of us are so absorbed in our anattas still, even after many years of devotional service, we're not remembering Krishna when we're chanting. You know, we're still just trying to fight off our mind. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, get a stick and just hit your head. Right? Or get the shoe and hit your head. But if you're going to chant like that forever, that's not going to be very stimulating. You know, the rest of your life, you're just going to be fighting your mind. I mean, what's that? If that's as far as you can advance in Krishna consciousness, then you know, you'll be lucky to stay around and stay enthused. So you have to become absorbed in Krishna. So when you're chanting, his pastime should be entering the mind, entering the consciousness. That is kirtan ras. That's what Prabhupada is talking about. When you're chanting, extract the rasa. What is the rasa? It is smaranam or remembrance of Krishna. And that needs to come in due course of time. Okay, it's not going to come overnight, but you should be very clear about what the goal is. In English, there is a saying, do not get on a ship unless you know its destination. Right? Of course, it's a lot of fun just to go and get on a ship and just see where it goes. That's a lot of fun. But you can't live your whole life like that. Eventually, you have to know where you're going. And in spiritual life, it is very important that you know where you're going. And where are we going? And what will we do in Goloka? And how will we serve Krishna in Goloka? In other words, what is your Siddha Deha? What is your eternal form or your Swarupa in Krishna's service? That's the whole point of this Hare Krishna movement. Right? It's nothing else. There's nothing else that we're doing here. All the service we're doing, all the chanting we're doing, all the classes that we attend, all the preaching that we're doing is leading to one point. That you can rediscover your original relationship with Krishna. That's what it's all about. Now, if you don't understand this, then what are you doing? What do you think the goal of ISKCON is? What do you think the goal of your spiritual life is? To be the biggest book distributor. Some devotees, that's their goal. Like, I want to be number one book distributor, in ISKCON even. Like that. And that's fantastic. That's wonderful. But that's not the ultimate goal. That is a... That will give you adhikar to reach your ultimate goal. Or to understand your ultimate goal. So we have to understand what is the whole goal of this. It is to become fully Krishna conscious. And understand our eternal relationship with Krishna. So, the earth is the most important planet. So therefore, Lord Varaha has gone to the bottom of the universe. He's brought this planet back. And this planet is situated... And he understood, Lord Varaha, he picked the earth up because he understood this is the most important planet for all the living entities. If they take birth here and they take advantage of the situation here, they can directly go back to the spiritual world and be with me once again. So that is our mission, to understand our good fortune. Don't lose the opportunity. And not even don't lose the opportunity, because most of us will stay devotees our whole life. Most of the people here will stay devotees their whole life. Most devotees will serve Krishna their whole life, but understand what it is that we're trying to do and go to the deepest level of our Krishna consciousness and attain the highest goal which we're meant to be attaining, which is the prayojana, love of God. So we'll stop here. We'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed. Understand what your point.
No, I mean, because you indicated that Brahma may be a devotee or may not be a devotee.
Yeah.
That's what I have told. So, I mean, there are two things that, you know,
Yeah, but you can do 100 lives of Varnashram devotee as a jnani also. You can do 100 lives of Varnashram Dharma perfectly. Be a jnani. You don't have to be a devotee, because Varnashram, Rupa Goswami explains this in Nectar of Devotion in Bhakti Rasamrita. Varnashram is not an item of bhakti. It's supportive of bhakti, but it's not an item of bhakti. So therefore, you can do Varnashram. You don't have to be a devotee to do Varnashram. So many people can do Varnashram. Mayavadis can do Varnashram. You don't have to be a devotee. So Varnashram does not lead to Krishna. Varnashram is the perfect social and material situation to support your devotion to Krishna. But it's not in and of itself. It's not devotion. Rupa Goswami explains that. When Rupa Goswami gives 64 items of bhakti in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he doesn't mention Varnashram as one of them. So he explains that early. I think chapter 4 of Nectar of Devotion explains that Varnashram is not bhakti. TK? Yes, sir. I'll just wait. Is that okay? You mean in Brahma Samhita?
Yeah.
In Brahma Samhita? And yeah. Also in Bhagavatam? It's mentioned second canto that he saw the Lord directly. So what's your question?
So, I mean, by having dasan of the Lord, yeah. He gets
yeah, but it's not every Brahma. When we hear about Lord Brahma, even in the Bhagavatam, each time we hear about Brahma, it's not the same Brahma. There are many Brahmas, many lifetimes. It's not the same. Even when you hear about Varaha, now we're hearing about Varaha, the Jiva Goswami mentions that the one time the Bhagavatam says Varaha is whitish, one time he says it's reddish. So even Varaha, it's not the same Varaha. It comes in different kalpas and different times. So sometimes the Bhagavatam mixes up the appearances. So when the Bhagavatam speaks of Brahma, in the second canto it says he shook the Lord's hand. And then you hear in the Brahma Samhita another thing. Then the 10th canto you hear that he steals the car. It's not necessarily the same Brahma doing all of these things. It can be a different Brahma. Does that make it clear? Okay. You okay? One thing we have to understand, because I'm studying this very carefully at the moment, it's not that the stages are unconnected or disconnected when we go from Shraddha to Prema. We must understand this point. And in fact, when we say Anatta Nivritti, and then we say, because sometimes devotees think, you know, we do Sadhu Sangha, then we do Bhajana Kriya, then we do Anatta Nivritti, and then we do Nishta, and then we, no, it's not like that, because Anatta Nivritti goes to Bhava. You've still got anattas of bhava. Right? It's only at prema that everything becomes fully eradicated. So nishta, one time Prabhupada said, nishta means like 70% anattas are gone. So you can see, so you look around ISKCON, right? Or you look around this temple, right? And you'll see devotees who are, they're just steady. They're just fixed. They do the same service for year after year after year. Aniruddha Prabhu, Chinchurupa Manaji, you know, Bhaktiman Prabhu just, you know, stuck his head in the door and gave us his darshan at the beginning of the class. But, you know, like, I've known Bhakti for, you know, over 20 years. You know, we were brahmacharis together. You know, we've known each other for a long, long time. The guy, I mean, he's got nishta. It's not that all of his anattas have gone. All of my anattas have not gone, right? Mine are far from gone, right? I can see it. His anatta's not fully gone, but he's got nishta. Like the guy does the same service day in, day out, every year. You know he's going to be there. You know, and that's nishta. That is fixed. Because one time, it was actually here in Melbourne, the former temple president Balaram Prabhu, before Aniruddha Prabhu, he asked Prabhupada, he said, if someone takes Brahman initiation, what must be the qualification? Prabhupada said he must be steady. If we give someone Brahman initiation, they must be steady. Because when you worship the deity, you have to be steady. We can't deal with some crazy person who's there and not there. And that's what happens now in ISKCON a lot of the time. And this temple's very good, but in many temples, People, they just don't turn up to do their service. What an apparat. What an apparat. You're supposed to be doing a service for Krishna and you just don't turn up. I mean, what is that? That means you are not qualified. So, nishta means fixed, it means steady. To be steady, it means your anattas have to be dissipated to a certain extent. So you can see many of the devotees in ISKCON, they're like nishta. A certain level of nishta. Right? Where they have that eradication of anattas enough, they don't become disturbed by their material desires, they can just fix on. Many of us are nishta to one extent. But then if you go through nishta, the higher level of nishta, because where does nishta go to next? It's ruchi. And what is ruchi? Ruchi means a very advanced level of chanting and purification and taste for the holy name. Right? It means a real taste for hearing about Krishna. It means one just needs to hear and chant about not just the philosophy, but Krishna all the time. That's ruchi. You just need to speak about Krishna, think about Krishna, meditate on Krishna, chant about Krishna, hear about Krishna directly. Because when we're on the lower level, you know, the Bhagavatam is spoken systematically. So many, you know, we've got a taste for hearing about the Bhagavatam, many of the parts of the philosophy, and some of us like to study the philosophy very deeply. But where's it all leading? It's leading to attachment to Krishna himself. So when you become advanced, you become absorbed in Krishna, not just the philosophy. So some devotees are attached to the philosophy, but hearing about Krishna himself and his pastimes, they haven't developed so much ruchi for that yet. So ruchi means when you have taste for Krishna directly. And asakti means you can just not leave him. It says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes the difference between ruchi and asakti in Madhurya Kanambini. He says that when you have the platform of ruchi, you're absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna, but sometimes you don't notice that your mind goes away. So you don't notice, you know, all of us are like that. You know, we're chanting, and we're chanting attentively, but we don't notice sometimes our mind goes off, and then after a few minutes, we're like, oh, wait a minute, and then you bring it back again. So that's ruchi, like a high level. You're attached to Krishna, but sometimes your mind goes off. Asakti means that you might be doing something else, and you don't realize it, but your mind just goes back to Krishna. Because you're so attached to him. Mind just goes to him all the time. Well, what's Krishna doing now? Where is Krishna now? Which pastime would he be doing now? I'm about to cook for Krishna. What would he like to eat now? That's a sakti, means just attachment. Does that give some clarification? Do you want to add anything? Is it understandable?
You are talking about pure mind in deity worship, and Brahmins are specially qualified in doing that. But why there is so much persecution of Brahmins, pure Brahmins in India? You know, some people, you know, don't respect them, and you know, it hurts to see that. Because they're delivering, they're giving knowledge, pure knowledge, and they're poor and they don't have food to eat and they're not respected. In the olden days maybe, but nowadays, you know, everybody's forgetting them. So
yeah, well, a Brahmin has to be qualified, that's the point. A lot of the people who call themselves Brahmanas in India, they're just Kula Gurus, they're not really Brahmanas. They don't really have the Adhika. You know, like, you know, you need to do, you know, you see in India people need to do a Jagya, they call some Brahmana, you look in the phone book, you know. It's like in Australia, you know, you need an electrician. So you look in the phone book, okay, electricians, and you have da-da-da-da-da. So in India you want a Purohit, or a Pandit, or a Brahmana, so you look in the phone book, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, then you pull up these, many of them are not qualified. They don't have the Brahminical qualities, they don't understand spiritual life properly, it's just a job. That. So if the Brahmin is actually qualified, yes, he should be maintained by the government, actually. But these days, Kali Yuga means everything is mixed up, especially our food. Very important, when you buy something from the supermarket, look on the label. And if it has anything in it other than food, Be very careful of buying it, actually. Devotees should eat whole foods. As soon as there are additives, you know, oxide, you know, all this stuff. I mean, suddenly you pick up a bottle that has 20 things in it. That's not good for you. I watched a couple of documentaries recently. The stuff they put in our food, it's crazy, man. It's great. It kills us, actually, like that. So, Kali Yuga, everything's mixed up, especially our food. So you should eat whole food as much as you can. Like that. So, I'll take it. There's another question. So. One you're doing it for Krishna and the other one you're doing it for someone else other than Krishna. So that's the differentiation. So, you know, many people are steady in this world. You know, the Queen of England, she's remarkable. She's actually remarkable. If you study her as a person, I mean, there's some crazy stuff as well, but, you know, she's actually remarkable. You know, she's like Prabhupada in many ways. Like, just always there on time. Like, if you go to the Queen of England, she's not late, man. She is there. Yeah. So anyone on this, you know, if I look around this temple, there's only a couple of people I can see. I know I'm going to be on time if we make an appointment. You know, in ISKCON, you know, it's like this habitual thing that, you know a meeting's going to start half an hour later. You know, you put a program up, you know, we're doing a program, everyone knows it's going to come 3 hours later. You know, what's that? Queen of England's not like that. And she's steady. She's just there year after year after year. And she does her servant, you know, huge public responsibility, you know. So how does she maintain that? Mainly from sattva gun. If someone can maintain something, it means they have a lot of mode of goodness in them. And they may have a lot of mode of passion, ignorance also, but there's a lot of mode of goodness there to maintain something. So as devotees, we also, because some devotees aren't very reliable either. A lot of devotees aren't very reliable. Some devotees are very reliable. So if they're reliable, that means the mode of goodness is there. But what makes a devotee superior is that a devotee is doing everything he does for Krishna. So that's better. I mean, you can be steady and fixed and reliable, but if you're not doing it for Krishna, then what really is the point? The Bhagavatam says, Shrama Egahi Kevalam. It's just a waste of time. Does that answer your question? Anything else? That's good. Any other question? Just give me a minute, I'll see if anyone else has. Any other question? Okay, Rabbi.
Especially in the modern times, there is so many distractions, like technology, computers, mobile phone, satellites, you know, all those things. The mind, you know, runs in 1,000 miles an hour, and the body can't cope up with it. Mind, you know, is
I understand.
All over the place.
What's your point?
So how do you bring it back to earth?
Then go and live in the forest and stop watching television. It's your choice if you want to be on the internet. It's your choice if you want to listen to the radio. And it's your choice if you want to watch television. So don't do it and then you'll be peaceful. Just go and live in the forest. Any other points? That's it. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.